Good day, friends. You're listening to Coffee Chat on WKXL 1450 AM and WKXL1450.com, your hometown radio celebrating Concord and the Capital Region. I'm Doris Ballard. Well, I am thrilled, just thrilled this morning to have my guest on. He is a performer, and he's been performing for many, many years, and I think many of you may have heard of him or have seen him. If you haven't, after this interview, I know you will want to follow his career. So without any further ado, I would like to introduce the perceptual engineer, Mr. Andrew Pinard. Good morning.
Good morning, Doris. Thanks for having me.
Now, everyone at home or in their car or at work is saying, all right, I give up. What's a perceptual engineer?
Well, a perceptual engineer is a fancy way of saying magician. A perceptual engineer refers to the fact that I use my skills and my knowledge of psychology and human perceptions to sculpt a reality that can't exist, and I help to help to have you share in that experience. So basically, I perform magic, whether it's sleight of hand entertainment or also kind of mental magic.
How long have you been performing magic?
I started performing magic. I actually gave my first performance in the second grade. I did a full second grade assembly, and I performed a simple magic trick that I'd learned from the library. I actually studied magic until about the fifth grade when I went on to study music and theater. And I went on to college to study music and theater, and I taught theater for 5 years at Pembroke Academy. But when I was teaching at Pembroke Academy, I kind of got back into magic. In fact, I was in a local bookstore and happened to see a book that I had had when I was a kid, and my girlfriend at the time bought it for me. She's now my wife, so everyone can blame her. But after that, I began studying magic. The first 2 years I studied magic, I studied 7 days a week, basically 4 to 5 hours a day while I was working in my other jobs. And then people started to hear that I was doing magic, and so I slowly kind of segued into it. Actually, one of my first professional performances was for Ballard's.
I performed. Oh, no kidding.
During the summer, I performed in front of the ice cream stand, and you were one of my first paid customers as far as that
Well,
goes.
You were good then.
Well,
so
thank you.
And you're fantastic today.
Well,
so
I appreciate that.
What was it as a young man that attracted you to magic?
Oh, I think I was your kind of typical young boy who was looking for some excitement. And I was kind of, on one hand, I was very vocal and very outgoing. But on another hand, probably as a youngster, I was a little uncomfortable with a lot of social settings. So I spent a lot of time reading as a youngster. And I had been exposed to magic. The church that I went to, I grew up in Derry, New Hampshire. And the church I went to, there was a performer by the name of Ace Gorham. Now, some of your listeners might remember Ace Gorham as Uncle Ace on the Uncle Gus show on Channel 9 years ago. And Ace Gorham was a president of Gulf Oil, lived in New Hampshire, and was also a semi-professional magician. And he became the president of the Society of American Magicians, and he was also the president of the International Brotherhood of Magicians. And I kind of grew up around him, and I got a chance to see him do some of his magic when I was a youngster. And I think that appealed to me, that notion of having this special ability that no other kids had around me. So I spent a lot of time, and I learned my first magic in out of books that I took out of the school library.
Now, you mentioned that you brought the word psychology in there, and how much of that plays a part in what you do?
I'd say 99% of what I do and what most magicians do is based on some pretty basic principles of psychology and an understanding of how the human mind works. Basically, as we grow, as we start as children, we're experiencing things first as children by putting things in our mouth and then later determining what hurts us and what doesn't. And then we start to develop more sophisticated knowledge systems. And most of that is developed by creating a system, a framework in your mind of how the world works around you. And what I and other practitioners of magic do is we study how people think and what sort of processes you go through when you're perceiving something. And a knowledge of that allows me to set up certain expectations and then go a different way through technology or through just by taking a detour and having you think you're going one way and I start going a different way. And the moment where we collide, we call it cognitive dissonance, is when you have this experience of magic, something that all of a sudden occurs that couldn't possibly occur. So it's predominantly setting up expectations and helping audiences think in a particular direction so that later you can kind of pop them into a moment of magic.
And how important is presentation, Andrew? Because to me, not everyone can be a successful magician. I mean, you have to have a theatrical bent, or you have to be able to present yourself in such a way that you capture people's attention and keep them with you.
It certainly helps. I'm really lucky in the fact that I got out of magic for a long time, and I went on and I studied theater, and I performed as an actor, and I worked as a director in the theater, and that helped substantially because a lot of magic is in the presentation. Again, the secrets, how the things work, really don't matter at all. What matters is how you get to the point that you can then use that little bit to trigger that motion of magic. Now, presentation is everything in the fact that you're also trying to communicate something, and whether that's just a moment of impossibility or whether you're trying to communicate some sort of deeper kind of relevant meaning to your magic, all hinges on presentation. So really understanding, again, how the human mind works and finding a way to develop and script your performances in such a way that you can help people experience the reality. You kind of lead them along, but if you ever push them, then it negates the strength of the experience. So it's about trying to help them find their own way.
Do you have to learn about your audience before you do a performance?
It helps. When I work for corporate settings, for example, there are a lot of times that I customize my presentations to sell a particular idea, or if they have a goal that they're trying to meet, or if they have some sort of motto that they're working with. I just did a corporate presentation for Health Dialogue down in Manchester for 400 people, and they were in the process of trying to look at how random elements of their business come into play. And so I developed a bingo game where we played bingo with the entire group of people, and then there was a surprising magical finish to it. But it is very much about trying to find what is really important in people and to move that way. And it's not just in corporate settings. When you're working with any audience, if you can get a sense of where they're from, that gives me a more complete understanding of how they're going to think and what's going to appeal most to them. And then I can adjust either my performance or the material that I perform to give them the strongest experience they can have.
Well, we're going to be exploring all of the types of magic that you do and where you perform. But I'm interested in hearing who some of your idols were in the magic field.
Well, it's interesting because none of your listeners, or I think very few of your listeners, are going to be aware of any of the people that I'm going to suggest. In fact, there are very few magicians nowadays that really have a deeper sense of the people who have inspired me in the past. Obviously, Ace Gorham is one of the people who influenced me very early on, but a lot of the performers that have influenced me are no longer with us. An example of that would be Al Baker. Now, Al Baker was the first dean of magic for the Society of American Magicians, and he was a carny man. He traveled with the fairs and the festivals. He's a real brute, kind of what we call muscle magic kind of thing. And he really distilled magic down to its strongest components. But he was also a very subtle thinker. And he wrote and published a number of books and manuscripts on magic. And I learned a lot from Al Baker's way of thinking. Don Allen is another performer who was one of the first magicians to have a regular television show back in the 1950s. It was called The Magic Ranch. And he was a Chicago-based performer. And eventually he traveled around the world performing trade shows, and he was performing at the Playboy Mansion as well when it was first built. So, and Don had a very comic way of interacting with people. He was probably a comic first and a magician second, but the magician he performed, the magic he performed, and the approach he took went on to influence magicians who never had the opportunity to see Don Allen. His style of performing became very pervasive, and it's not a rare experience for me to be performing something and go, oh gosh, you know what? That's something Don did. And it's just stuff that you pick up, and so he was another pioneer in magic. Now I try to actually stay away from magicians. I try not to watch magic shows. I try not to. I learn still through books. I study different magic magic works. I have a library of about 2,600 magic volumes and 13,000 wow. periodicals. And I mine the older material because, you know, the old adage, what's old is new, is very true, especially, you know, in today's society. When I was studying magic, it was hard to learn magic secrets. You know, you couldn't get them easily. You had to go seek out another performer and maybe work with him for a while and gain his trust, and then he would teach you some material. Or you could learn from various magic books and things of that nature. But since that time, in the last 10 years or so, there's been a huge explosion of magic on DVD. You can buy magic DVDs online. You can go onto YouTube and learn magic on YouTube.
Really?
Yeah, it's really amazing. There's an adage in magic that if you want to hide something, you put it in print. So you and nowadays, I guess if you want to hide something good, you put it on the internet because there's so much material available that it's hard for any one person to know any of it. But when it comes down to it, as a professional performer, as opposed to somebody who's studying magic all the time just for themselves to perform occasionally for their friends, there was a magician in the late 1800s, David Devant, who was approached by an amateur magician who came up and said, "Oh, Mr. Devant, I know 500 tricks. How many tricks do you know?" And David Devant looked at him and said, "Well, I know 5, but I do them really well." And that's something that's very true. I spent a lot of time in my early years learning as many different things as possible. And I still occasionally add new material, especially if it explores a concept or idea that I want to share with audiences. But what's interesting is my repertoire has probably shrunk over the years.
Really? Well, I can see that. What's your style?
Oh, my gosh. My style. I am a very visual performer,
and that's why you're on radio today.
And that's exactly why I'm on radio. I only seek out those venues who fully exploit my talents. I'm a visual performer, but I really specialize in audience participation, and so a lot of my work is about trying to, I like to think of myself as the catalyst for this experience. So I'm the host of what's about to happen. I'm not really in control of the magic. In fact, sometimes the magic takes very surprising turns that even I don't anticipate. But I'm there to kind of start the ball rolling and then involve the audience as much as possible. And whether I'm performing in a banquet setting, a stand-up show for corporate functions, or I'm performing for children at a school setting, or whether it's in a restaurant performing for 4 people at a table, I strive to involve them as much as possible and to create an experience that is one of a kind. We're creating a story in which I'm the catalyst, but I'm not the storyteller, because we're all part of the story. And I want my audiences to walk away with something that they'll be able to tell their friends, their families, their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren eventually, about the time that they had, that they spent time with Andrew, and this wonderful thing happened.
We're speaking with Andrew Pinard. He is a perceptual engineer, as you would call it. He is a fabulous magician. And we're going to hear about his career and where he's been performing and what type of performances he now does. He does so much. And later on, we're even going to do a little magic here on the radio. So don't go away. Very interesting show this morning.
P.E. ratios, ROI, earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Needless to say, there's a lot of confusing financial jargon out there, but there is one term that most investors understand completely: customer satisfaction. And Edward Jones was ranked highest in investor satisfaction among full-service brokerage firms by J.D. Power & Associates for the 3rd year in a row. Maybe because our approach to investing has always made sense for our clients. We only recommend investment strategies that have proved themselves over the long term. We still open offices in the neighborhoods where our clients live, and our financial advisors actually prefer meeting with you face-to-face. And while being recognized by J.D. Power & Associates is great, we're really only satisfied when we're helping clients achieve their financial goals, which is another thing most investors understand completely. To experience a different kind of customer service or to learn more, contact me, Jeff Trombley, your Concord Edward Jones financial advisor, at 223-4012, member SIPC.
Folks in the Concord area have relied on Endicott Furniture for over 80 years. This is Mark Reingold. Over 80 years and still going strong, because we offer quality furniture, fair prices, and a friendly staff. At Endicott Furniture, we promise you a pleasant shopping experience. And at a time when almost all furniture being shown is imported from China and the Far East, did you know that most of what we sell at Endicott Furniture is made in the USA, with much being made right here in New England? You're probably spending more time in your home right now. Take a look around. Could you use some decorating help? Our decorators will come to your home, make a plan, and stick to your budget. And you'll be so pleasantly surprised at how affordable this can be. Come in and let us help you give your home the look you really want. Whether it's a new piece to spruce up a room or a new room to spruce up your home, you'll be saying thanks, Endicott. Endicott Furniture, 12 South Main Street, downtown Concord.
Remember the feeling of first being in love? Well, give your Valentine the gift of having you around longer. Quitting smoking can be hard work, but when you do it, it's well worth it. And you will feel much healthier right away. Give yourself and loved ones the most precious of gifts, a good long life. Quit smoking now for yourself and for those you love. And if you need help, call 1-800-TRY-2-STOP for support. This message is brought to you by Breathe New Hampshire, online at breathenh.org.
Young and athletic, or just wanting to improve your personal fitness level? Choose Brian's One-to-One Fitness, where highly trained professionals help you set and achieve your goals. Hear a testimonial by one of Brian's clients.
I started with him last winter and just worked through the spring, and he's helped me get my speed up, my agility, and just core strength. He really helped me a lot.
Call Brian's One-to-One Fitness, 738-5579. That's 738-5579.
Welcome back to Coffee Chat. I'm Doris Ballard, and with us here this morning is the famous Andrew Pinard. He's been performing magic for how long, Andrew?
I've been doing it about 17, 18 years now.
And you're only 25 now.
Yeah, 23.
Now, you're married, and you have a child.
Yeah, I have a daughter. Her name is Lydia. She's 7 years old, and it's actually been wonderful. Doing what I do has given me the opportunity to do the stay-at-home dad thing. So I was performing nights and weekends and on the road with the occasional corporate daytime function, but it gave me basically 6 years to spend watching my daughter grow up, and now she's very excited to become a part of the show. And in fact, this morning, she was just finishing up a big poster that she wants to hang on top of the banner that presents Alejandro's Old Time Magic Show, which is the family show that we do, and she decided she had to have her own stage name, so she's now Lydihandro. So.
Lydihandro. So does she perform with you on occasion?
She has. I've had the opportunity to take her a few times to school shows and things of that nature, and early on I actually had to, because she's no shrinking violet, we'll put it that way. She likes to get up on stage and ham it up, and so it's very difficult to keep her from jumping up on stage. So when she was about 4, I actually had to teach her a magic trick on the off chance that she wanted to charge up on the stage and perform. And so there's been a couple of times where she's come with me to school shows, and she's had to perform because she's impulsive, and she was 5 at the time. And she gets up, and I say, here, fine, you do a trick. And I just grab a thing out of my bag, and I sit down with the kids, and she gets up there, and she performs the piece, and the audience goes wild, and then she's gotten it out of her system, and I can go back to work. Of course, she steals the whole show. But
isn't that great? I love it. I'd love to see that show with her in it. All right, speaking of Alejandro's old-time magic show, why don't we start with that? Tell us about that.
That's one of the first types of performances I wanted to do. Early on, I was influenced a lot by vaudeville performers, and I've always been kind of intrigued in visual humor and things of that nature. So when I created my first show, I created the Alejandro's Old Time Magic Show, which was geared towards family audiences, and I've since done it. It's the longest show that I've performed. I've since done it at dozens of fairs and festivals. I perform it at hundreds of schools at this point, and it's a fun, interactive family show. In fact, we just did it at First Night Wolfboro back in December. But that show is really kind of the core. That's where all of my shows came from. We used to tour that to the opera houses up north. We performed in the Littleton Opera House, Whitefield Opera House, and we did a 2.5-hour stage show, and it was fundamentally the Alejandro's Old Time Magic Show. Over the years, I've continued to perform that in a number of venues, mostly fairs and festivals. We did the Stratum Fair for a number of years. We did the Sandwich Fair, the wonderful Fall Foliage Festival, First Night New Hampshire when it was here in Concord. We did it for 8 years, and that's kind of the backbone of my performances. But in the last I'd say 11 or 12 years, I've been doing migrating over to kind of working in the hospitality fields. For almost 11 years, I performed twice weekly at a seafood restaurant in Merrimack, New Hampshire, and I did that up until they closed back in May, and I still perform in restaurants. I actually published a magazine on restaurant and bar magic called The Magic Menu, and I did I did that with another performer out of Connecticut, Jim Sisti. So we did that for a number of years as well. And meanwhile, you know, when you're performing in a restaurant type of setting, you meet a lot of different type of people, and that kind of propelled me into doing a lot more corporate work as well. A lot of company representatives were seeing me, and I'd perform for them, and then I would end up doing shows for companies.
So you do trade shows, sales meetings, and at corporate events, that sort of thing.
Yes, I do.
You do so much, and we're going to be talking all about that, but that's just two things that you do. Go ahead. You were talking about that.
Yeah, in the corporate venues, I predominantly do kind of training seminars, things of that nature, and the occasional trade show. I created a whole series of exercises called Perception Shifters, which is about creative communication, and we talk about team communication, inter-team, intra-team, and communicating with clients as well. So I have a whole show that I developed that I perform that kind of illustrates the tools that a magician uses to help audiences experience a piece of magic, and how you can transfer those same tools to your communication with your clients, communication with your colleagues, and in a variety of circumstances. And then we do kind of workshops. The Perception Shifters are geared at developing creative ways to look at your product or service in a new way.
Talk about strolling entertainment.
Strolling entertainment is probably my favorite to do, and at times it can be the most frustrating. Strolling entertainment is where you're just dumped into any setting. It could be a cocktail party at a corporate event. It could be in the middle of a fair and festival where you just walk up to people, or in a restaurant setting where you walk up to someone's table and you just, all of a sudden, you're performing magic for them. And people aren't aware necessarily that you're there. You're there to serve a role almost as an icebreaker to bring people together and give them an experience that can jumpstart communication. And also, in some circumstances, when you're working for a company and they want you there, you're also there to promote their product or service. So you try to develop a presentation that subtly reinforces, you know, the message that they're trying to send. But it's a whole different experience because it involves walking up to a group of people, basically interrupting their conversation. Hopefully you're not interrupting their conversation. You're aware of lapses in their conversation. You can walk up and work in and then provide them an experience for 4 or 6 minutes, and then you walk off and you do another group. And it's usually the first couple of groups that are the most challenging, especially for newcomers to the field, that, you know, how do you walk up to somebody and just start working? Well, you engage them on a human level, and then you extend the invitation to what you are about to provide, and then you do some magic for them. And then hopefully you walk away, and people have had a spectacular time, and they start telling other people, and you start developing a crowd. In some instances, it transfers into a show. In fact, I rarely work situations now that I'll do any strolling magic unless there's over 100 people, because under 100 people, you start performing, and people start gathering, and it transitions into a show. Mm-hmm. So I very rarely try to do strolling for anything less than that.
Have you ever had people say, no, sorry, and walk away?
I did when I was younger. When I was first getting into it, I didn't have a real good sense of when to approach tables or when to approach groups. And now I pride myself on my ability to be able to segue into a group and then give them the experience and never experience any resistance. But it does happen periodically. I mean, occasionally you make a choice to approach a group and they're deep in conversation about something, or maybe they're sharing something between themselves in conversation that they're not ready to open up to that experience. But it's part of the experience.
So it's second nature for you right now.
Nowadays.
After so
like
many years,
so, yeah.
Right? We're speaking with perceptual engineer or magician Andrew Pinard, as we would recognize that terminology. And when we come back, we're going to do a little magic trick here, so don't go away.
AP Update. I'm Rita Foley.
To have lost an officer in the line of duty.
L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa on the tense drama that has hundreds of police officers in Los Angeles now surrounding a house. Assistant Chief Jim McDonald says this began last night with a telephone call to police.
The caller indicated that he had killed three of his family members. West Valley patrol units responded to conduct the investigation. The suspect refused to leave the home, and LAPD SWAT was called to the scene.
Shortly after the officers arrived at the home, they got into a shootout with the barricaded man, according to authorities. One SWAT officer was killed. Another was seriously wounded. Police say the man inside claims to have killed three family members, but they say they haven't yet been able to confirm that. Authorities have not explained how they were able to get into the home to bring out the wounded officers. As we said, one died and one has survived. I'm Rita Foley.
If you have lived in the greater Concord area for any length of time, you can remember when a great three-bedroom, two-bath home could be purchased for $79,000 or less. These days are long gone. It is getting increasingly more difficult to build a home or an addition for less than $110 or $120 a square foot. If you have not reviewed your homeowner's insurance with your agent recently, you really should. And if you don't have an agent or an agency with whom you're doing business, please call the Floyd Lewis Agency at 228-6300. That's 228-6300. We would love to show you what we can offer. Insuring Concord area families since 1961, we are the Floyd Lewis Agency at 105 Loudon Road. At Floyd Lewis Agency, you are a stranger only once and never a number.
Good morning, everybody. Here's my latest weather forecast on the threes for Concord and the Capital Region, for Webster to Ebbs and DeBow. For today, snow piling up, 7 inches, tapering to flurries. This afternoon, it'll be cold, temps in the 20s. Cloudy, flurries overnight and low 20s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, maybe a flurry near 30. Saturday, cloudy, chance of more snow developing before dark, temps close to 30. And weather forecast being brought to you by EW Sleeper. We're located in Concord and have been selling and servicing snowplow and ice control equipment for over 40 years. Come to EW Sleeper Company in Concord for all your Fisher snowplow and sand spreader parts and accessories. We have over 100 years experience in snowplow and ice control maintenance. Winter is here. Are you ready? Now is the time to stop by EW Sleeper. We love snow and invite you to come in today to check out our Fisher snowplows. They make winter a breeze. That's one forecast you can count on. For more information, give us a call at 225-6711 or check us out online at ewsleeper.com. I'm meteorologist Mark Rosenthal for WKXL 1450.
Welcome back to Coffee Chat. I'm Doris Ballard, and we have our very famous perceptual engineer here, or as you would know him as a magician, Andrew Pinard. And when I told everyone that Andrew was coming on the show this morning, of course, I got the typical, well, what's he going to do on the show as a magician? Make you disappear? Hearty har har. Well, that's not going to happen. But when Andrew came, you said you had a trick that you could do on the radio.
Well, I have a little something I'd like to experiment with. This is more along the lines of what we'd call mentalism or even mental magic. And what I'm going to do, we're going to try to play a little experiment here. Doris, I want you to think of any number 1 to 10. Just think of any number in your mind. Now, if I was to tell you the number, I would have a 10% chance of actually getting it right. And I don't like those odds so much. So I'm going to take a guess here at whether your number was odd or even. I'm thinking you're thinking of an odd number. Am I correct?
Yes.
I am. See, isn't that amazing? 50-50 is a much better odds in that chance. But I don't want this to be about probability or chance. So what I'm going to do, I want you to continue to think of the number that you have in your mind. And I'm going to show you a list of 10 characteristics. And I want you to look at whatever number you're thinking of and think of that characteristic. Fix it in your mind, okay? So there are 10 characteristics, 10 different characteristics. You've got that number that you're looking at, and you've got a characteristic in your mind, okay? Now, what we're going to try to do now is I'm going to read aloud 10 different items. And I want you to just to further disassociate this from any probability. I'm going to read one of these 10 items should maybe trigger something in your mind with the characteristic you're thinking about. Okay, so I'm going to say blue felt tip pen, special delivery postage stamp, shining silver carving knife, yellow ball of yarn, original oil painting, old felt hat, South Sea Island. Let's do a couple more. Western Stagecoach, antique clock, or China coffee cup. Do you have one of those items in your
yes.
mind? Okay, focus on that, because I'm going to try to get some of the impressions from your mind of whatever object you're thinking of. 10 different objects, and I want you to concentrate on that object. In fact, to make it easier for you to visualize it, I want you to hold your hand palm up, and I want you to imagine the object or place or whatever in your hand. Okay, you can feel it in your hand. You can feel almost there's a certain weight to it, a certain heft. Can you feel the heft? It's
yes.
a little weight. It's also kind of a little cold and tingly, isn't it? You can almost feel there's like a metallic feel to it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, be very careful, okay, because I really don't want the knife to cut your fingers. Was that the object you were thinking of?
Yes.
It was. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Now, some people would say that's mind reading. To tell you the truth, I can't read minds. I can, however, see things before they happen. In fact, I'm going to invite your engineer to call my answering machine at home. So if you can go ahead and give my phone a call, and hopefully we can put this on the air.
That would be Adam.
Adam, you're with us, I hope.
Here we go.
Absolutely Magic. We're not available to take your call right now, but please leave a name, telephone number, and a brief message after the tone. We'll be glad to get back to you. Please check us out online at absolomagic.com. And if this is Doris Ballard calling, be careful. That knife in your hand is really, really sharp.
We can leave a message if you really want to.
I can't even believe that.
Yeah, that's part
that's
of what
amazing.
I do. It's about trying to explore and to play with people's minds. And I try to do that both, you know.
But how did you know before you even came here?
Well, it could be probability. It could be magic. I'm uncertain. All I know is that it's about shaping your experience. And it's about trying to play with people and get them to imagine to see the world that you see. And I can hope to be right as often as possible.
Well, you certainly were right this time.
Well, thank you.
And I'm befuddled. To tell you the truth, Andrew, I can't believe that you did that. All right. You know, one of the things that I was thinking when you were talking was many, many years ago, I bought a little magic kit. And I tried the magic. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to know how to do this? And then I knew how to, when I knew the secret, I couldn't do it anymore because I figured it's so obvious everyone was going to see it.
Yeah, that's a one-word answer for you, guilt. Yeah, it's very hard for a lot of people when they start to learn magic and then they realize how it's done and they try to present it. It's very hard to get over that sense of guilt. Oh, my gosh, somebody's going to see it. It's so obvious. But a lot of people don't realize when they see the magic trick that they want to learn that they forget the perspective that they had when they were an audience member. And that's really the challenge in magic. When I design a new piece of magic or I design a presentation, I have to really constantly remind myself of what the experience is that I'm trying to shape. Forget about what happens and how it all works, because honestly, that doesn't matter. I had a conversation the other day with a good friend of mine, and we were talking about how audience members will sometimes say, "Wow, how did you do that?" And, you know, we kind of talked about the fact that when they say, "How do you do that?" they're not really asking how you do that. They're more trying to put their head around this whole experience, and that's the thing they catch on. They go, "Well, there must be some how to do that," and that's how they do it. They're expressing their enjoyment. But it can be very challenging. I mean, I feel bad for my wife. My wife, you know, knows a lot of magical principles, and when she watches magic, it's hard to stay focused and keep your eyes on like a layperson and really just try to enjoy the magic. But, you know, it's not hard to learn magic. Like I said, you can go online, you can pick up books in the library, and you also have to rely that the people who design the magic trick understand the human mm-hmm. psychology, and as long as you follow the steps, it will elicit a specific reaction. Humans are like Pavlov's dogs. I mean, you ring the bell, we salivate. That's the way it works. And if you make it interesting as you go along, then people are going to really explore and really enjoy the experience.
If you're just tuning in, we're speaking with Andrew Pinard. He's the famous perceptual engineer and been doing magic now for
many, many, almost 20 years, yes. And talk to us about some other things that you do. First of all, let's give your website, because you mentioned it a bit.
Yeah, you can go to absomagic.com. That's absomagic.com. One of my corporate clients recently said, did you know you have Abs-O-Magic? And I thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. Here I am, a perceptual engineer, and yet I couldn't realize that I'm talking about my abdominals on my website. But no, it's Abso-Magic. I also have a number of other websites which you can link to from absomagic.com. But I do a number of different types of performances. Over time, I've explored. I did a lot of work in the restaurant field.
You were just recently at the Barley House.
I am. In fact, I'm performing regularly at the Barley House.
Well, good.
I'll be there tonight.
We'll have to go see
Concord.
You.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you can find at my website, you can find my public performance schedule. And I have dates both in February and in March at the Barley House. But some of the other things that I've explored, but besides the vaudeville type of magic and the restaurant magic, I just had a show last summer in Maine, and the show is called Andrew Pinard Lies Honestly, and it's an exploration about why we lie and the types of lies that we tell. We have the lie that we tell ourselves, we have the lie that we tell everyone else, and then we have the lies that are told to us. In fact, St. Thomas Aquinas said that there were three lies that did not negate your entrance to the kingdom of heaven. There was the lie that flatters. No, those pants don't make your butt look big. The lie that avoids physical injury. No, those pants don't make your butt look big. And the lie that amuses, the jocular lie, which is predominantly what I work in. So I do that lies performance. I have done in the past, for over 10 years, I performed An Evening with the Spirits, which was a theatrical seance. It was a reproduction of what an authentic spirit seance would have been in the 1800s. And I performed that at the West End Studio Theater in Portsmouth, but I've also toured with it. And then I do kind of corporate shows, which are the up close and magical. And that's an hour-long sleight of hand experience as well. And I have a new venue that I'm actually working at, and I'm very excited about this. Back in October, I began performances at the Ioka Theater in Exeter, and I'm working in their downstairs theater space, which is about 75 seats. It's a kind of a nightclub theater space, and they have a full bar there. And so we've been exploring different aspects of creating a cabaret show in that space, as well as doing kind of focused party shows for children. And so that's called the Magic Manor. And you can go to themagicmanor.com and find out information about that there.
Tell us about the Magic Manor. What type of birthday parties do you do there, and what's involved?
Right now, we are creating a total party experience for families, for family audiences. So what we do is we might have two, three, four parties going on simultaneously. And it's a total party experience because people show up, we meet in the lobby of the Ioka Theater, and we do some interactive magic there. And then we bring everybody downstairs, and I do about an hour-long magic show downstairs, and we splash the child's name up on the movie screen so they get to see their name up in lights, and we do the performance, and then following the performance we have a games segment, and we do open gifts, and then we provide also the refreshments, the cupcakes and the drinks, and then we also provide goodie bags on their way out the door. So it's a total party experience. It runs about an hour and 45 minutes in length, and we've been doing those Saturday mornings, and those can be booked by going to themagicmanor.com. And as I said, we're going to be expanding into doing cabaret style performances and having multiple artists, whether comedians, visual performers, jugglers, magic, singers, all of the like. And hopefully you and your daughter might consider coming down and performing sometime.
Great. Well, I see a little bit of the vaudeville background here and some of the work that you've studied. The cabaret, to me, has a little bit of feel, or could feel a little bit like vaudeville.
It very much is. I mean, vaudeville was a fascinating period of time for entertainment. People who performed in vaudeville had the opportunity to do their act, and it might be a five-minute act. They develop a five-minute act, and then they can live their entire life performing that 5 minutes over and over and over again. Nowadays, most performances, you know, if you want to be successful, a lot of people aspire to mass media. And that 5 minutes that one person spent a lifetime crafting and sculpting is done and gone. Once you do it once on TV, you can't do it again. And part of what I want to do with the cabaret performances is to kind of reintroduce people to live entertainment, and also to kind of give them that party atmosphere, that experience. That, yeah, it's more, the experience I'm sculpting is more like the lounge acts in Vegas in the 40s and 50s, Louis Prima and,
oh yes,
and, you know, where people come in and the acts, they have regular acts, they have guest acts, but the MC is the host of the experience, and you play with the audiences, mm-hmm, while you're there. So we're hoping to start that up in the next couple of months, and we may then take that on the road and create a circuit, a mini vaudeville circuit.
That's
for
great.
Performance to tour.
We hope to come to Concord. What about The Strange Thing?
Ah, The Strange Thing. The Strange Thing is a real fun experience. I started this at the Sandwich Fair almost 2.5 years ago. The Strange Thing is harkens back to the old curiosity shops, the dime store museums, where they would have oddities exhibited. And The Strange Thing is something we started at the Sandwich Fair, and it's a tent, and people come up and they see on the tent, it says, "See the Strange Thing." What is it? That's what we'd like to know. Possibly the strangest thing you'll ever see. And inside the tent is this box, and on the box is a question mark. And people pay $1 to come in and see the strange thing. And the interesting thing is there's a strange thing in the box. I can tell you, it's really, really strange. And people pay their $1, and they come in and they see the strange thing. And people react in all sorts of different ways. They react in horror, fear, laughter, tears. I've had people scream and run out of the tent. And what's really interesting about it is they're paying their $1 to see the strange thing, but they're also paying their $1 to become the show. And people hang around the tent and they watch it. And two seasons ago, we didn't do it last fair season, but the season before that, we did 7 different fairs in New Hampshire, and we took it to it, and it was wildly popular. And I've taken it and done it in private events and for kind of corporate promotional settings and things of that nature. It's just a really fun experience. It's something people don't get to see anymore nowadays when you go to the fairs and festivals.
Well, we talked at break a little bit, and I think of you, Andrew, as besides being a fabulous magician or perceptual engineer, as you like to be called, I think of you as a fabulous producer. I mean, you're listing all of the things that you've created out of your vision, and to me, that's why you've been as successful as you have been as a full-time magician, because you have a really good instinct for producing things that people want to see.
Well, it's interesting because to be able to do what I do full-time, I was talking with our arts czar, I call him, in New Hampshire, Van McLeod.
Van McLeod.
And Van and I were talking one day, and Van said, you know, I don't know how it is that you do what you do, because I'm not in a conventional theater setting. I don't necessarily perform in theaters. I don't, you know, I can perform in diverse settings, from, you know, corporate banquets to a restaurant to an outdoor fair and festival. So there's a wide variety of settings. But part of that also is about exploring the things that really interest me and finding a venue or creating a venue to do it. And one of the things I've been trying to do over the years is to push people's perception of what magic is. I sometimes get frustrated that people feel like magic is something strictly for children. And it's not just the public that believes this. A lot of magicians take that tact as well. They think, well, you know, the best way, the easiest way to make a living is to just to go out and to do children's magic, mm-hmm, shows. And the magic doesn't even have to be good, because it's for kids. And I feel that's really not a good way to approach your profession. And I think it's very important to explore how we communicate using magic as the medium. So that's why I've explored these things. I mean, An Evening with the Spirits, we've done that, and people go to that, and it's a completely different type of experience. But it ultimately, fundamentally, it comes down to shaping a person's reality and exploring and playing with what people bring to the table. So it's all similar. It's more, for me, about searching and creating new venues for what I do, which gives me an opportunity to continue to explore the creative elements associated with the medium.
I'm very curious to hear more about An Evening with the Spirits. What does that entail?
I started that in 1997. We gave our first performances at the Candlelight Inn in Bradford, New Hampshire, and I created, what I wanted to do was to explore. I've always been interested in spiritualism and mediums, people who can speak with the dead, and or purportedly speak to the dead. And so I wanted to explore what the experience was like for people in the late 1800s. And this particular venue, the Candlelight Inn, was built on, or a portion of it was built on the foundation of an inn that had burned down 100 years preceding. So I took some of the historical elements associated with this this property and then built a story and an experience based around some of the characters that might have been staying at the inn at the time. And I've taken that, I've actually performed that for the Society of American Magicians Assembly number 9 out of Boston. I've performed it in in a number of different bed and breakfasts for 12 people and myself being the 13th, the sitter. And we go through and we do the whole hour-long experience where people get to sit down and see what a seance experience was like. And we have every performance is different because it comes from the audience. And at times in the performance, audience members actually write down questions before the show and hope that the conditions will be suitable, that the spirits can answer their questions. So we've had a number of times where people cry, you know, that there's a very strong emotional component that they bring to the table. It's not something that I do. And I've had experiences in the show that I can't control, that I'm not aware of how things have happened. And so I'm on the fence. I don't like to say whether this is real or not, but it certainly is valid as far as an emotional experience.
Tell us some of the places where you have performed.
I've traveled all around the Northeast and the United States performing. In New Hampshire, I've performed regularly at resorts. I perform right now. You can see me on Sunday afternoons at Mount Sunapee. You can see me on selected Thursdays at the Barley House here in Concord. But then I do a lot of work. I've performed for 8 years at the Mount Washington Hotel. I've performed at the Balsams, the Killington Grand Resort. I performed at the Beach Club in Old Orchard Beach, Maine. And then I do a lot of work for corporations. So I've worked for Fidelity Investments, Teradyne. It's the list of clients is a mile long, and you can see them at absomagic.com.
Absomagic.com. Is there a phone number that people can call you at, or would you prefer they go through your website?
Well, if you go to the website, you can fill out our online event request form, which will give us more information about your event, and then I can call you to discuss the specific needs of your function.
What are some of your favorite venues?
I love old theaters. I coming up out of the theater and performing theater for a number of years, I really just there's something about walking on the boards and looking out to an empty audience and just hearing kind of the echoes of all of the performances that have preceded. I'm getting chills right now talking about it.
It is a great feeling.
And I remember when I was in college studying theater, I used to go in. I was the technical fellow, so I had keys to the building. And I used to go in after a performance, and I would turn on the lights, the theater lights, not the house lights necessarily, and I would lie there on the stage and just listen to the room breathe. And I really love older venues. I love the opera houses. Claremont has a wonderful opera house. Lebanon has a wonderful opera house. Littleton has a wonderful opera house, which is unfortunately closed right now, but the hope is that they will be rehabilitating that. They have a great group of people there. And in Concord here, we have some really wonderful venues. I mean, we have the Capital Center for the Arts. Mm-hmm. I have a fond memory of going and seeing Itzhak Perlman perform there when the heater had broken.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It was 40 degrees inside the theater, but he played anyways, and that was prior to its current incarnation. So I love smaller theater spaces. The Anna Carico Theater here in Concord is a wonderful little venue. It's a jewel. And then you have the City Auditorium, which is just spectacular.
We'll be back with Andrew Pinard for our final few minutes, and he is a famous magician, and we'll talk to you when we come back. Don't go away.
Are you worried that you might outlive your money? How do you know for sure how much you'll need to last your lifetime? My name is Bill Myers, and I'm an investment advisor here in Concord. My wife and I live in town with our two children, and this is my 18th year in the financial arena. Again, the question, how much money will you need for retirement? Today, people are living longer than ever. Also, there are products that simply did not exist 15 years ago that combine growth with safety. Let Myers Financial show you how you can have guaranteed income for life and safety of principal with very competitive yields. My strategies are simple. It doesn't matter if you're just starting out or already in retirement. I use an age-based approach to ensure a safe balance for your assets. Give me a call at 225-6235. That's 225-6235. You've heard it said that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step. Why not let the success of your financial journey start with one phone call?
William D. Myers is an investment advisor representative of Envision Investment Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Angeles. I'm Rita Foley.
To have lost an officer in the line of duty in the way that we have.
One police officer dead, another in surgery in Los Angeles after a shootout with a man who claims to have killed three family members, according to police.
The suspect refused to leave the home, and LAPD SWAT was called to the scene.
The home is now surrounded by hundreds of police officers. There is late word the police have lobbed tear gas into the house. Angelina Jolie has popped up in Baghdad as a UN goodwill ambassador. She says more has to be done to help Iraqis who are trying to return to their homes. There is more evidence this morning that our economy is buckling. Retailers are reporting weak sales for January. Snow and flood are the big worries in the Midwest. Two communities north of Milwaukee are dealing with 20 inches of new snow, and flood warnings are in effect for parts of Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and New York. I'm Rita Foley.
Welcome back to Coffee Chat. We are here with Andrew Pinard, famous local magician and beyond, and he likes to be called a perceptual engineer. And if you did not get to see or hear the trick that he did after the second break, I'm still amazed. I don't know how you did that. But I'd love to have you back on if you could do some of that.
I'd love to come back.
That would be great.
Maybe next time we can have somebody call in and do some magic for one of
your
listeners.
That would be wonderful. We'd do that. Yes. Okay. If you think that would be great, folks, give us a call at 225-5521 and let us know that you'd like to have Andrew back on, and we'll have a call-in perhaps someday.
That would be great.
Okay. All right. Real Magic Quarterly.com. What is that all about?
Well, I'm involved with, I work with magicians, and I teach magicians about the psychology behind the three shell game. And that's one of the things that I do. If you go to 3shellgame.com, you can see information. But I've been involved the last year or so with a project called Real Magic Quarterly. That's R-E-E-L, Magic Quarterly. And what it is it's a, it's like 60 minutes for magicians. It's a series of interviews. It's a 2-hour-long DVD. And my segment, I produce a segment called Continuum, which is a look at the individuals and institutions that shape magic's past, present, and future. And so I've been traveling around the country, and actually we just went in November to Toronto, Canada, to interview notable performers and to look at the influence they've had in magic. So I had the opportunity last April of sitting down with Harry Lorraine, the world's most foremost memory expert, who was on the Ed Sullivan Show 8 times and on the Tonight Show 9 times, and to get a chance to talk and kind of capture these performers before it's too late, to get a chance to sit down and talk with them and get the stories from them that we can then share with magicians in the future. I also am involved in magic as the co-editor of the Yankee Magic Collector, which is a book that comes out every other year on magic history, and it's a publication of the New England Magic Collectors Association. So those are a couple of projects as well. If you go to nemca.org, N-E-M-C-A.org, that's where you can find New England Magic Collectors Association or Real Magic Quarterly.
Andrew, we're just about out of time, so let's remind people where they can see you perform and about your website.
Well, tonight I will be performing at the Barley House in Concord, so if you want to brave the storms, come out and see me.
It'll be done by this afternoon.
I'm hoping.
Yes.
I'll be there from 7 to 9 tonight, and if you'd like to see me perform at your table, request as you come on in. I'm also performing every Sunday at Mount Sunapee. I'm in the Sunapee Lodge, so you can see me there from 11 to 1 on Sundays. So you have plenty of opportunities locally to see me perform.
And if people want to hire you or engage you for a corporate event or in children's party or whatever, they can go to your website,
absomagic.com, and there you can fill out our online event request form, or you can also look at our public performance schedule. There's a link there as well, as so that you can find where we're going.
Thank you so much, Andrew Pinard, perceptual engineer, a famous magician, I like to call you, for being on Coffee Chat this morning.
Thanks so much for having me, Doris.
And thank you for tuning into Coffee Chat. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.